his dream job is just job, just being gainfully employed. You know that meme that's like, I do not dream of labor? He is the opposite. He dreams only of labor and sometimes lips. The Secret of My Success was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two people who didn't get here early enough, and now we're at the back of a very dank concert venue. It's Camila Adams.
Hello.
And Robin Hitchcock.
There's Mekhi Phifer.
8 Mile, a 77. Good movie.
Yes. Very exciting.
Much better than I thought we had rated Saturday Night Fever,
we did the sequel.
We talked about how 8 Mile was originally considered the hip hop Saturday Night Fever. We did the sequel. I'm pretty sure I watched Saturday Night Fever in preparation for that episode,
which has nothing to do with anything. The sequel is called Staying Alive.
Staying Alive.
Yes,
we gave that a 31 2/3.
That movie was awful.
I barely remember watching it.
Mm-hmm. It was bad.
All I remember is the dance at the end. And Stallone directed it, right?
That sounds right.
The scene where Stallone walks by him on the street and goes, hey. Like, that's all I... Also, better than Bohemian Rhapsody, 71 2/3. We've blessedly missed a lot of music biopics.
Anybody who just raised their eyebrows, go back and listen to our Bohemian Rhapsody episode. Camila and I defend that movie adequately.
Yes, we did our best.
This is sometimes movies just movie.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure was. And The Secret of My Success is kind of just movie.
Yes.
I had never seen it. I don't care that I did, but I did. It was a movie. See everybody in 2 weeks. I did not like have a moment of recognition when we drew this. You two at least knew it. Had you seen it?
I would have told you I had seen it, but watching it was like it was completely new to me.
Absolutely saw it. I was like probably 11 when this came out. And I'm pretty sure like this is in the height of Michael J. Fox in all of his glory.
I mean, this is Michael J. Fox above the title.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So that's probably why I watched it. And I know I may have watched it once or twice at that point, but this is one of those movies that I would have thought that, yeah, I watched it like a billion times, you know, just when you had mentioned it. But then after rewatching it, I was like, no, I see why I'd only probably watched this once or twice.
Yeah. And, like, it's not bad.
It's not bad, but it's absolutely above what an 11-year-old would be understanding.
Also that. Although, the thing I kept thinking about is that one of my favorite movies, like, it's literally in my Letterboxd 4, is Working Girl, which is from around the same time and has around the same plot.
Right.
And so I was like, why do I love Working Girl so deeply? And this is leaving me pretty cold.
You watched it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I think that might be why.
I'm so sorry. Tell me what Working Girl is about.
Oh, Working Girl is about Academy Award nominee Melanie Griffith stealing her boss, Academy Award nominee Sigourney Weaver's job while she is on vacay in France or Switzerland.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from that description, it's because that's about, you know, the underdog becoming, you know, having a taste of the rich life, in a way.
The other key difference is that she steals her job to work a deal with Harrison Ford. Sorry, Academy Award nominee Harrison Ford, if I'm going to keep doing that. And so her secretarial pool is completely unaware of this. She's not going up and down the elevator and stopping it and changing into better clothes, right? She's doing this outside of the prying eyes of anyone who knows her.
So it's mostly like she already works for Sigourney Weaver, right? So it's like, you know, what a lot of people would imagine, that basically their admin is the one that's actually also kind like, of keeping everything right, together.
As a former administrative professional, right. that is often low-key the case.
Yes, samesies.
Yes.
Same.
So it's, but I love that movie when I was a kid is basically why I thought of this, is yeah. that before I really understood the working world, right?
Right.
I understood Let the River Run. And then this movie absolutely did not feel that way. I mean, I was watching it as a grown-up, but I was like, this does not make working seem cool.
No, and even as a grown-up, I was like, I don't know what they do here. Like, what?
I wrote in my notes, it's like Christian Grey's company.
Right, exactly. I know they fucking were shitting on Toledo a couple times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, and I watched it on Amazon Prime and I fell asleep. And when I woke up, Baby Boom was playing. So there's a theme.
I mean, it's so 80s is the thing about this.
Like, that's what I like about it. Yeah. That's what's keeping me on board.
It's a nostalgia pill, right? Because right?
yeah. there were some cute little funny moments. But overall, as a movie.
Montages.
Oh, so many.
Saxophones.
Well, there was one montage where I was like, there's no reason for this to be a montage. And then later you find out it's because he's making the deals that will let him take over at the end.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, they couldn't write dialogue for this because then they'd have to like look up what business words are. Well, so it just has to be a montage.
It's crazy to me because like it's 1 hour and 54 minutes or something. It doesn't need to be that long.
No, they could have got this done in a quick 80 minutes.
All the montages is what draw this damn thing out.
Squeezing an extra showing, theater owners. If you haven't seen it or saw it once and but
forgot about it,
let me tell you what happens, sort of.
Go.
Brantley Foster is a kid with a college degree, a terrible name, and a dream of working himself to the bone and maybe having sex with a tall queen. He leaves Kansas for New York, but finds out that his entry-level job doesn't exist anymore thanks to a corporate takeover. He looks up his distant uncle, who owns a giant something-or-other company, and gets a job in the mailroom, quickly learning his way around the company because, as Newman from Seinfeld taught us, when you control the mail, you control information. He's seduced by a desperate housewife who turns out to be his uncle's wife and thus his distant aunt by mail. Marriage, the movie really should have underlined more often. She just can't get enough, but he's smitten with the company's one female executive. He seduces her, but she's also sleeping with the boss with an attitude of pre-sexual harassment training. Eh, what can you do? Meanwhile, Fred Gwynn is planning to buy out the company, and Uncle Horny doesn't have a good plan to save it. Everything goes all three's company at a weekend retreat. All the secrets of success and otherwise come out. The jilted aunt teams up with the youth movement to take over the company, and everyone is happy, including Herman Munster.
Wow, 1 second spare.
Oh, good.
Wow, that's awesome.
I thought I had gone slightly overboard there.
No, okay, so the aunt thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, his mom was like, yeah, you know, someone married somebody.
She got bit by a dog and died. Throwaway line of dialogue that what happened to his real aunt is that she got bit by a dog and died.
Missed that completely.
The one... Okay.
Which, but, like, what?
Right, yeah. So my thing is, like, why? It's like, sir, you have already stuck your dick and other things in this woman. Mm. Why start calling her Aunt Viv now? Like, don't do that. Or Vera, whatever it is.
I was like, wait, Aunt Viv?
Yeah, don't start throwing around the aunt title now.
Yes.
It's, I don't know. I intellectually know, like, okay, they're not blood. Whatever, it's fine. And yet there's so many people sleeping with so many people with a lack of desire to do that.
It was that it's deeply unclear to me how much he consented to that sex.
Yeah.
Because it seems like she's like bullying him into it.
Yeah.
But then he seems really happy.
Right. Like after the fact, yes. Like he's like real like chill about the whole thing.
He's
and like, you know,
yay, I got laid.
Right.
And then he says the worst part of his day was getting laid. And it's like mixed messages.
Yeah.
Well, and she's the same. The love interest.
Helen Slater?
Helen Slater. Never even came close to learning that character's name.
What is her name?
Gail?
Anybody? I want to say.
Karen?
Ellen? Could it be Ellen or Evelyn? It is Christy. No one was even close. Christy Wills. No one was in the neighborhood.
I just called her Supergirl the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's why she was familiar.
It's like where is she on the scale of like I am being abused mm-hmm. to I don't want this, but I'm doing it for my career too. All right, I'll sleep with him.
Moments that worked for me in that whole thing was when they're fighting about it towards the end. Like when they start at the top elevator and are fighting and at the bottom elevator are in love again.
Right.
She's like, you slept with your aunt. And he says, she seduced me. And then she says, he seduced me.
Right.
So my understanding from that one exchange was that she was genuinely swept up into something with her boss.
Yeah, sure.
Which there's an inherent power dynamic problem there. It's bad. She should know better, but he should know better. Yes. Times 5,000.
Right. I did like that when they were doing the creeping around the house, everyone trying to go to the lover they wanted, that the
French farce part.
Yeah, that the middle management guy was like, well, fuck, if we're doing it, she's hot. And just started. That was cute.
Yes.
That was.
This movie is wildly horny in a way that I do appreciate.
Yeah.
Even though a lot of the wild horniness made me deeply uncomfortable.
Is icky as well?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess, is this just because Michael J. Fox was a heartthrob at this point in time, and this is after Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted, like, the girls wanted to see him a little more sexy. Is that, do you think maybe this is why this thing exists?
I guess.
I remember him being the heartthrob, and I remember always thinking that he was cute, but he was never my type, per se.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so he's because never he's, been a...
Because he's a hobbit? Is that...
Yeah, probably.
Listen,
even at 11, I knew...
On a cute to hot scale, he is a far cute.
Well, that's...
He's adorable.
The Helen Slater casting is weird because she is grown-up pretty.
Yeah.
And like statuesque.
Right. And so the two of them, it's like, you know, like she looks so...
They do let her tower over him, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Oh, and that was with him standing on crates.
Right.
Like she's got like 5 inches on him.
Yeah.
So they had him stand on the phone book in every scene.
Like, this is the best we can do, Mike.
Right. This came out April the 10th of 1987, the 8th number one movie in America that year, $7.7 million that weekend. And several following. This is a 5-week box office winner. That is mostly because nothing came out. The movies that defeated in that 5 weeks are like Project X, not the one from the 2000s. The Disney re-release of Aristocats, much different. Extreme Prejudice, Creepshow 2, Gardens of Stone, Hot Pursuit. It did not
have heard of most of those.
Yeah, exactly. It did not have a ton of competition. Finally falling to third in its 6th weekend behind both Ishtar and The Gate. $67 million. That's 7th for 1987. That doesn't sound like a lot. That's more than the box office runs of Lethal Weapon, Witches of Eastwick, Dirty Dancing, Predator, RoboCop, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Full Metal Jacket, and Eddie Murphy Raw. None of those made as much as The Secret of My Success.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, some of that, I think, is going back to this thing we were talking about with R-rated movies.
Yeah.
A lot of those were rated R.
Yeah, I guess
so. It's just this
was PG-13.
Right, so this was back when people just really didn't go see R-rated movies.
But as Camila was saying, the other thing is just the power of Michael J. Fox. This is directly in between Back to the Future 1 and 2 in 1985 and 1989.
Truly the height of his powers.
And Teen Wolf was also 85. And this was kind of the first, like, logical chance to see him in the movie theater after Back to the Future Teen Wolf. Mm. He did Light of Day, but that was kind of very clearly not, like,
the one with Joan Jett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
It's a fairly, I haven't seen it. I think it's more of a drama. Like it was not like, hey, fun time with the heartthrob.
No. It's like, look, he can do serious stuff.
Got
too.
It.
He did Bright Lights, Big City, which was very similar, I am told, the following year. And Casualties of War, which is good, in 1989. This was like the commercial thing between Back to the Futures. So that made it a 5-week number one movie in America. The soundtrack seems like it should have been a hit. It was the same producer as the St. Elmo's Fire soundtrack, clearly trying to do the same stuff.
It sounds like...
Yeah.
Every time it interjects, it sounds like the guy should be just literally singing what he's doing. No, like just like singing what walking through the mail room.
Yeah.
Like that's what I'm expecting, like from his tone and the way the music sounds.
I was deeply troubled by the opening song says what the secret of my success is.
The secret of my
69 hours a day. Living 25 hours a day? Who wants that? I want to live 14 hours a day maximum.
Who wants to do anything he does? Other than have sex with Helen Slater.
I want to have a big couch in my office.
Yeah, that's good.
Exactly.
But like, it's so weird to have a movie that's like Kid with a Dream, and it's so vague about what that dream, just having a job.
Right, that seems to be the city. A dream, yes.
That's the end of it.
Right.
Like.
And my biggest question is Carlton getting checks?
I just genuinely don't understand the whole scheme. Okay. Right. He learns that sometimes the mailroom knows when someone's been fired before that person.
Right.
So is he knows that Carlton has been hired before that person?
Is that a real person?
Right, exactly. It's so confusing.
Wait, do we jump all over your facties?
Well, there's more facts, but this is more important. What? Yeah. I'm not clear on who Carlton Whitfield was.
Right.
Is that a name he made up because he knew the office was empty and everyone just rolled with it?
That's what I was thinking. That was my understanding through the movie.
I am going to cut in the Pepe Sylvia rant here, because do you remember that episode of It's Always Sunny? Colin reminded me.
That right there is the mail. Now let's talk about the mail. Can we talk about the mail, please, Mac? I'm dying to talk about the mail for you all day, okay? Pepe Sylvia, this name keeps coming up over and over again. Every day, Pepe's mail's getting sent back to me. Pepe Sylvia, Pepe Sylvia. I look in the mail. Well, this whole box is Pepe Sylvia! So I say to myself, I gotta find this guy. I gotta go up to his office. I gotta put his mail in the guy's goddamn hands. Otherwise, he's never gonna get it. It's gonna keep coming back down here. So I go up to Pepe's office, and what do I find out, Mac? What do I find out? There is no Pepe Sylvia. The man does not exist, okay? So I decide, oh, shit, buddy, I gotta dig a little deeper. There's no Pepe Sylvia, you gotta be kidding me! I got boxes full of Pepe! All right, so I start marching my way down to Carol in HR, and I knock on her door and I say, Carol! Carol, I gotta talk to you about Pepe! And when I open the door, what do I find? There's not a single goddamn desk in that office. There is no Carol in HR. Mac! Half the employees in this building have been made up. This office is a goddamn ghost town.
And he just happens to answer the phone that one time. And then, like, this is that one phone call that was quote-unquote successful. That's what he's like, yes.
I wasn't even sure if that was really happening, right? I was like, is he fantasizing about business?
Seems possible.
Right? Hello. Yes, business. Yes, order more trucks. Do the business. Right. Sign here.
I'm important. Big deals. Business
I'll send it by messenger.
Businessman.
Yeah. I'll fax that to you.
Get my cards. Carlton Whitfield, businessman.
The main theme song, 25 Hours a Day, is by Night Ranger. Mm. The secondary theme song, which also describes things from the movie, is by Pat Benatar.
Yes.
Bananarama's on the soundtrack. Roger Daltrey's on the soundtrack. It just didn't hit. The album peaked at number 131.
But also, Day Bow Bow. Also, It's Always Sunny reference.
And then they play that song from the 80s, Day Bow Bow. What the hell is Day Bow Bow?
Day Bow Bow.
Oh, Day Bow Bow. Oh, yeah. Day Bow Bow. Day Bow Bow.
That is not on the soundtrack. That is just in the movie. Same with Walking on Sunshine. It does not appear on the album. Maybe that hurt it.
It does appear in the trailer.
Yes.
Michael J. Fox is Brantley Foster. He came to New York to make it on his own. They started him at the bottom.
Show the college puke the ropes and keep him out of my face.
But he had a secret way of starting at the top.
This is Carlton Whitfield. Carlton Whitfield?
Well, I didn't hire any Carlton Whitfield. There's something going on around here, Foster.
He was trying to stay one jump ahead of everyone else when his uncle's wife got the jump on him.
Ah! What the hell happened?
He fainted.
That's when he met her.
Tonight? Booked. Tomorrow night? Booked. All right, but don't beg, okay? It's embarrassing.
They were a merger made in heaven.
That wasn't bad.
That's when everything else...
Howard, please.
...went to hell.
I never slept with the boss.
No, you slept with the boss's wife.
Michael J. Fox. The secret of my success.
Way too much of the third act in that trailer.
My God.
Power couple basically made in heaven. Like, you're really, like, overplaying the duo of Mike and... Helen, whatever her name is. But
Yeah. Does this count for our bingo square? Because it's not like there's a twist. Not there isn't a twist, but like the trailer,
it pretty much gives it all away.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yay. Yeah. Okay.
And also, Sean just came back from a little trip, didn't he?
Yeah.
Mark off your Sean box.
What was it?
Sean comes back from a little trip.
Oh, I hadn't even talked about the little trip or the fact that I watched this movie on the plane.
Oh, there you go.
I was gonna, because I didn't even like fully watch it on the plane. I watched it mostly in the, like at the gate, like an hour, the sitting it before the plane hour, right, and then finished on the plane, which I would say it didn't help, but I don't think it mattered.
No, it seems like a totally fine watch at the gate movie.
Oh, yeah. I watched the last 20 minutes in Max's vet appointment on my phone. Yeah.
I have a bingo, by the way.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Oh, I
did it myself by traveling. Yeah, Coke or Pepsi placement, bad foreign accent, bad where? Romantic chemistry.
Oh, you did it.
That's
here.
From last week.
I totally didn't mark that. Okay, wait.
Coke or Pepsi and bad foreign accent were from, what do we do before 8 Mile?
It was Too Fast, Too Furious.
Both were in Too Fast, Too Furious.
Bad romantic chemistry in this
also
one?
Also Too Fast, Too Furious.
We absolutely have that, yes.
And this one.
All right. Nice.
You were born in New Jersey, not New York, right?
Correct. Oh, yeah. God.
Well, I don't know. It's, they flow into one another. There's a whole... There's islands and shit. Who knows which is where? Bingo. That's the first time we've done bingo in the middle of Factsy. Here we are. No, it's fine. Despite...
We also did the trailer in the middle of Factsy. Everything is upside down today.
Yeah. It's because we're trying to live 25 hours a day, and there's not room for that extra hour. The secret of my success, the theme song, was a Golden Globes Best Original Song nominee. It lost to I've Had the Time of My Life, obviously, and yes, had no chance. The other losers were Shakedown from Beverly Hills Cop 2, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now.
Aw, that's such a good one.
And Madonna's Who's That Girl. So this was definitely fifth.
Wait, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now was original for...
For Mannequin.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm. You live in this different world where Diane Warren is not like a huge part of your life.
Right, yeah. Like I feel like I just found out who she was like maybe 5 years ago or so.
Not being an Oscars nerd. Yeah. It's so weird.
It did not make through to a Oscar nominee. The Oscars kicked out Night Ranger and Madonna for songs from Cry Freedom and The Princess Bride. Yeah, there's a musical. Well, there's a recent musical, The Secret of My Success. They just can't be stopped. COVID kind of killed it, though. It was only in its pre-Broadway tryout run.
Got it.
In Aurora, Illinois in the spring of 2020. Reviews were mixed. It was doing okay. That combined with, and we had to stop this, it's not coming back. It's been produced again since. It probably had a shot because it apparently the musical was just like a big New York story that didn't have a lot to do with the source material.
Was it set in the 80s?
I believe.
Because it's hard to imagine this in present day.
Yeah, right? Like with Google?
Right. And like just, you know, the mail cart isn't really a fixture in offices anymore.
Me thinking about that, about what is it like? Like probably this doesn't even happen. There's no such thing as a mail room.
I mean, anymore. Like when I was a legal secretary, like things, you still need actual paper in
right,
Allegheny
in certain.
And
yeah.
So like a lot of my job was literal paper pushing, but there was never any situation where there were carts full of paper. Even in the biggest offices.
I remember the old school manila envelopes with the internal office memos. Mm. Or am I really dating myself?
No, no. No.
There is also a Hindi remake. Raju what? Became a Gentleman. Great.
Great.
Good for them. Very, very briefly, just because I know that we're not going to get to him. The director is Herbert Ross. He did Footloose. He did Steel Magnolias, My Blue Heaven, Boys on the Side.
Wow, yeah. Really
Oscar successful. Nominated for The Turning Point.
For The Turning Point, Goodbye Girl. One of those guys that he had a good, solid career. He's no longer with us because it's a while ago. You probably don't know his name, but there is his name, Herbert Ross. Helen Slater replaced Christy McNichol, who was like pre-fired for being difficult.
Wow.
They cast her. They were like, she's going to be trouble. Never mind.
Wow. And, shame.
Yeah. Not that, you know, Helen Slater was good.
No, she's fine. Colin did say she's very beautiful, but she looks terrified.
When he first sees her, that whole montage of her fucking saucer eyes.
Yes, through multiple panes of glass for some reason.
Right. Unnecessary montage.
Finally, there are places that say this movie was inspired by the life of Steven Spielberg. Because allegedly there were a few weeks where he pretended to work at Universal when he was still in film school, that he like tricked his way onto the lot and a pass for 3 days. And he parlayed that into like occupying a vacant office for a few weeks. People like to say that. I don't really see any reason to believe that that's literally true.
What, that he did that or that this,
that, that it inspired, that this inspired, because like, I pretend to have a job is just a trope. That does not require the fact that Spielberg did that.
Right, yeah.
15 years earlier for me to believe it.
You know, yeah. I don't know. I hope that that's true, that he did do that.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that really, I love a story where someone is where they're not supposed to be.
Oh, no, he definitely actually did that. It's just whether or not that has any connection to the secret of my success is
basically
doubtful.
Whoever wrote this, don't blame Steven Spielberg for this bullshit.
Agreed.
Who here loves lips? The repeated shots of Helen Slater drinking from the water fountain.
Yeah.
The 30-second long lipstick application on Aunt Sexy
that
there.
Frosty, frosty pink.
Yeah, that took me back. I was like, wow. Yep. It is! It screams.
Yep.
And then the whole with her, like, you know, cricketing her legs in the back seat. He can't see that.
Really wanted them to show the rear view to see what exactly was coming through from her striptease. I did laugh out loud with her trying to make the screen go down and him trying to make the screen go up. Like there
a lot of the double entendre type with visuals, like, oh, the antenna's going up. And remember actual antennas like ours? Mm-hmm.
Fluid, come on. I'm sorry. I'm four, but it's funny to me.
Margaret Whitten is who that is.
She's in Big Girls Don't Cry, They Get Even, so she's an icon to me.
She was in something else.
For the rest of us, she's the villain in Major League.
Ah,
That's why I was like, I know you.
I know that his boss in the mailroom was the villain from Last Dragon.
What an 80s movie.
Right?
This shows up on like, you know, retro wave lists, because that's like an 80s word that everyone uses, but no one really understands.
Retro wave.
I'll listen to a retro wave playlist from time to time. It's like
Pet Shop Boys?
No, it's modern musicians, artists, DJs doing like synthy stuff, but with saxes and horns, so it sounds like a TV commercial.
I really hope the greasy guy from Lost Boys is on the cover.
Oh, you would
of
hope.
That,
yeah.
Yes. Of that playlist. Absolutely.
You know, he tours all the time, and like it's always local. Like I know people who have opened for him because.
What does he tour as? Greasy Man.
He used to play for Tina Turner.
What? What's his name?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
I should know it.
Like, I was asking, like, does he, like, from The Lost Boys?
Yes. No, oh, absolutely.
He's like a legit, well, probably, but he's also a legit musician.
Right, okay.
Tim Capello.
Okay,
he's primarily known for his saxophone work supporting Tina Turner in the 1980s and 90s, as well as for his musical performance in the 1987 vampire film The Lost Boys. Switch the clauses in that sentence.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I know, but that's not fair. That's not fair to Tina Turner.
It shouldn't be.
And yet.
That shouldn't be the case, but...
Michael J. Fox absolutely carries this. It's very watchable. I did laugh at it. Occasionally you'll hit, like this kind of happened with 9 to 5, where it was like, this is a big 80s comedy. I'm not laughing because the rhythm and the, you know, the comedy has changed so much. That wasn't the case here. I laughed out loud at this. Yeah. I enjoyed watching it. I just hated everything that it stood for.
This movie was 100% written by a Republican.
Yeah.
Like that scene in the beginning where she's like, can you be a minority woman? Yeah. I was like, I'm going to strangle someone.
So we're done here, right? Jeez.
That made me very unhappy. And just in general, the like his ultimate goal is job.
Right.
Very Republican.
Well, and people.
Oh, and that scene where the cops just start randomly shooting at civilians.
Right. And
this is what the city is like.
Right. And they all just happen to be. And it's, you know, he's in the barrio, you know, he's in a minority neighborhood. It's just too much.
Like, people throw this at Ghostbusters. People say that Ghostbusters is the big conservative movie because the EPA is the bad guy and they're a plucky small business. That's a stretch. Go for this one. Like, this is the happiness is achieved through labor and the advancement of business. Like,
but not even labor, right? He has a fulfilling, if all you care about is work, he has a job where he is given a pile of materials and needs to do something with them over the course of a day.
Right.
If you are a worker bee, love that job, right? Yeah. And he's not a worker bee. He wants a fucking big office and a pretty secretary. The number of times he talks about the attractiveness of his hypothetical secretary, alarming.
Yeah, and then his little parade down the row, he's popping in and say hello to this. It's all so, 80s business. This is what it stood for.
The letterbox list is movies that Siskel and Ebert gave two thumbs down.
Oh.
They both hated it. Useful list. Like I said, I watched this on the plane, so I don't have as many notes as usual. So
I was fucked up with most of the movie. I'm spent thinking, is his name Bradley or Brantley?
Brantley.
Which is stupid.
I mean, I, in one way, was comforted by Brantley because it means that this white person fake last name naming phenomenon is not a 21st century condition.
Definitely not.
That this has pre-existed my generation. I think that I felt better about it because of that. And I'm glad they made fun of him for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Secret... And again, I can't, speaking of names, I keep going back and forth. Is it Of My Success or To My Success? Secret.
Wait,
to
which
my
one is it?
To of.
It's Of?
I think so.
I thought it was Two.
The Secret of My Success.
No, I wrote of in my notebook.
Secret of My Success.
What's funny is either way, Google will get me there. I put it. So anyway, to wrap up, The Secret of My Success, : The Story of a Mediocre White Man.
Mm-hmm. Yes!
A tote bag, carry yourself with confidence. Like, on the one hand, seen and heard, but on the other hand, like, no, this is what happens. That's why that's on the tote bag.
Right,
you can waltz right in.
I wanted to shout out Mailroom Ducky.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I'm glad that Mailroom Ducky finds love with Aunt Viv.
It's so random. And then typical 80s movie fashion. Everything is tied up real nice, neat into the bow. Everybody gets love.
Pair of the spares. Go. I like it. What can I say?
I really want to call out my love for the Fred Gwynn, the Gwynnaissance that happened in the late 80s between this Pet Sematary and My Cousin Vinny. And he was doing other stuff. He was working a lot then. But he's so good as a weird-faced old guy.
He really makes the most out of his extremely bizarre face.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, Pet Sematary is obviously My Cousin Vinny is really good.
Yeah.
There's oftentimes, what is a Ute comes to my mind anytime I have a question about what the youth are doing these days.
I can't cross the street without saying us a mean roll. Good for Fred. I was watching the Munsters yesterday morning too. It's nice. What a career he had. I don't know. 54. This is the exact opposite of Too Fast, Too Furious, where it's like, I want to come as close. That was, how high can I go without calling this a good movie? This is how low can I go without calling it a bad movie? It's not bad, but there's nothing to it.
Yeah.
I started at 45, and I'm adding 1 point for the T over the flannel when he's running away. Just looked really funny, made
that
me laugh.
Fun.
And 1 point for, that was a very expensive vase. You bitch.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Ice cold.
Yeah.
I love when there's a heavy comma before you bitch.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what does that give you?
47.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm at 48.
We are all hovering around the same place last few episodes. Good for us.
Yes.
We've all convinced one another of our opinions. have shared taste at this point. 49 and 2/3. That, again... We have some that are perfect 50s. This is pretty darn close.
I do want to say that if you were born after the 80s, there's no reason for you to ever watch this movie. Like, so much of this is just coasting on nostalgia vibes.
And, like, you can get if you're going, you know, as an archaeologist to learn about the time, like, you're better off with Footloose or Flashdance or
Working Girl.
Yeah. Or there's many better ways to achieve your goal there. It's just, it's a movie. It was a big hit. It was the number 7 movie of 1987. Wow. Hard to believe. We have covered the bingo card to You Can't Handle the Truth. Let's start with, I don't know, Robin.
Highest to lowest. Did anybody else get to watch it yet?
Not yet.
Not yet. Sorry.
Oh, well, then this will just be monologuing about how much I loved it.
Great.
The thing about it is it's one of those movies, and Spike Lee has this mode where he just makes the slickest slick thing. Yeah. And so, like, watching the movie just feels cool. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like being in a really neat bar where you just feel cooler for being in the proximity of the thing. And, like, it made me want to go to New York, and I'm not a New York person, but I was like, I want to be on the subway. So, like, I think that it is heavily a vibes-based movie, but I don't think that that's a knock against it in any way. I also had not seen High and Low when I watched it, so it is possible that it was more thrilling to me because I didn't, like, know the story. I did watch High and Low the day after. Also a great movie. In a lot of ways, though, I liked Highs to Lowest better because, as you'll recall, High and Low spends, like, 90 minutes on police procedural.
What is High and Low?
It's a Kurosawa movie from the 60s that this is a remake of.
Oh, okay.
The basic premise of the film is powerful guy gets his son kidnapped, but oops, they accidentally kidnapped his driver's son.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's the basic premise for both. In High and Low, also, he's a powerful shoemaker. Mm. So, like, there is a very interesting conversation. There's a bunch of Japanese men fighting about women's shoes, which, like, is, you know, culturally interesting.
Right, right.
But, like, it is so much easier as an American in 2025 to connect to this music mogul. Right. And what that, and, like, I have some kind of understanding of what, I mean, obviously it's not a real understanding, but, like, enough. I am aware of the music industry in a way that I have no knowledge at all about the 1960s shoe industry. So, like,
right. There
was a little bit more meaning there for me because of that. Anyway, obviously Denzel Washington is fucking fantastic. Jeffrey Wright, so good. And A$AP Rocky.
Oh, I am really starting to like him a lot.
Steals the movie, in my opinion.
Wow.
He just really holds his character, manages to be so pathetic and so strong at once.
Wow.
In a way that really must have taken a lot of focus and just threading the needle. And I think that also comes from the writing and the directing, but it was just a really, really strong performance. Great movie. Highly recommend it on Apple TV Plus.
Did you get to anything else?
I watched Nashville for the first time.
The show?
No, the Robert Altman movie. And it, wow. Neither of you have seen that, I assume. Yeah.
Okay. I've tried. I tried a long time ago, and I was like, I recognize that this is good, but I'm not interested.
I will say that the whole thing came together for me in the last 20 minutes or so, and really in the last 10 minutes or so is when it really just becomes a completely different thing. And I watched it, we're recording on September 11th, and I watched it 2 days ago.
Mm.
If you've seen the movie and if you've been paying attention to the news, you will understand why I chose the right time.
Just letting that sit.
Yep. Okay.
We were never forgetting.
No, literally when the movie ended, I was like, I don't know what to do. Yeah. Normally when I watch a movie that is heavy, I will be like, okay, time to palate cleanse with a sitcom.
Right.
Yeah. But I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to pay attention.
Yeah, to sit in it with your feelings.
So I literally just sort of, like, stared for a while and took out a coloring book.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, good, movies like that where move. It's like, what do I do now?
Right.
Well, for me, it was the Jaws 50th, so the first day I was back, I went and saw Jaws, and then the next day I went and saw Jaws, and the day after that, I watched the Jaws at 50 documentary that was on.
Did Jaws win the weekend?
It was so close.
Oh, man.
No, it was, I think it was still Weapons, but it was within like $2 million.
Because I feel like everyone I know, normie-wise, was seeing Jaws.
Yeah. Hey, still good. Still good the whole time.
Yeah, no kidding.
In new stuff, new-ish, I saw Drop, the Blumhouse, Well, the you didn't need to. I see. The trouble is, I think it's in the trailer that her target is her date, right?
Yeah.
You know, that she's being harassed, and then it turns out that she's being harassed because her job is to, someone is trying to get her to kill her date for political reasons. And for that reason, you can't have them team up. She just has to be constant. The most of the action of this movie is her misleading him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's just not fun to watch for me. Like, it had moments, but it's just one of those stories that's so inherently frustrating that, like, I'm not enjoying this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was fine. I was able to call who the guy was, like, as soon as he showed on screen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, who, mm-hmm. it was like, okay, we know this is the one. And yeah, like, it was fine. I enjoyed it in the moment, but it's what I will never go back and watch it again. And I will never be like, you gotta see Drop. So.
I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
Slightly better, but even less, I think you should bother watching this, is The Conjuring Last Rites.
Yes.
Which may or may not be the final chapter of the Conjuring cinematic universe.
They're supposed to be making a series.
Yeah, right.
I know.
Yeah, right, is what I have to say to the last of the Last Rites. Come on.
They're going
to
spin off with the Warren's daughter. You know, I know, don't let reality get in the way of a good time, but like in this moment of misinformation, it does feel important to remind everyone that these people were con artists.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Lorraine believed what she was saying. Mm-hmm. Ed didn't. It was clearly just like, hey, we can make a lot of money and get on the late night talk shows doing this. They knew Amityville was fake. Annabelle was a doll that some person was like, I think this doll is haunted. That, like, all of this is made up.
Haven't you watched the news about Annabelle and her tour, her right. death tour, death tour 2025?
I really, really do not believe in this stuff, and I would go nowhere near that doll.
No, my opinion on that is, like, this isn't real. We know it isn't real. We know the whole history. That said, leave it alone. Why are you rolling the dice?
Right.
I can think that from over here just fine.
Two things can be true.
Yes.
That said, like, we've covered a number of these movies. They have the same problem. It's like, we set it up and it's spooky and, like, what's going to happen? And then it's like, they have to do some mumbo jumbo to put the ghost back in the thing. Like, that's the end of every one of them.
Right.
And it just goes nowhere at the end, especially on this one. Like, the setup story is kind of interesting. I'm glad it made a lot of money because yay for horror, you know, and I like them. I like Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga a lot. It's not bad. If you want to see it, knock yourself out.
I'm going to see it.
Go right ahead.
You deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
You deserve better, honestly.
Little spooky treat.
Finally, here's my theme park corner before I throw it to Camila. And I
theme park corner.
I could do this forever. because Among Our Journeys was the new Epic Universe, which is the new Universal Park. It's fantastic. It's the conceit is there are portals to different worlds. There's like a central kind of like spacey themed middle part with some good rides, and then you go through the portal to Super Nintendo World, and it's a completely realized you are just simply walking around in a Mario game.
Yes. Sorry.
What?
Completes defeats the fucking purpose.
I'm a schmuck.
Sorry, Sean.
Camila was passing notes, and I started replying to them verbally. Because
I mean, I saw her. I was probably going to let it go before this.
Yeah, it wasn't anything about you. I was just trying to, like, set something up.
Camila is a consummate professional, and I am a dummy. I apologize, Sean.
You go through the one portal to Nintendo World. You go through the one portal to the How to Train Your Dragon Island, which is very beautiful. I like that a lot more than I like the movies. One to Dark Universe, which is the Universal Monsters area, which is so
your
good.
Your home.
I loved it so much. They've got a burning blade tavern. You know how the windmill catches on the fire at the end of Frankenstein? Mm-hmm. They have the windmill on fire, and you can get drinks underneath. There's a vampire restaurant. There's two great monsters rides. The monsters are wandering around like we have a picture with the Invisible Man. That's the fourth portal right now. People are saying a Wicked portal is inevitable.
Yeah, like,
that's coming
sense.
Soon. The fourth portal is the obligatory Harry Potter area, right? Because it's Universal Park. They pretty much have to. Right. And it's very nice. It's set in, you know, like there's 1 minute of the Fantastic Beast movies where we're in Wizard France. So it's in Wizard France. And it's all nice and French. And the main ride is called Harry Potter and the Battle at the Ministry. Here is what I am putting out into the world on this public forum. This ride was designed as a fuck you to J.K. Rowling.
Oh?
You're going to have to explain this further.
The plot of the ride is you are attending the trial of Dolores Umbridge.
Yes.
And things go awry as she breaks out and tries to, you know, get Death Eaters involved. And, like, logically, I know, like, okay, we're at... So because we have to set this after the events of the series, there's only so many villains left to make the bad guy in the ride. But like, one, why do we need a bad guy for a ride? It's a ride. You can do whatever you want. And two, really, like, Dolores Umbridge is the main character of this theme park ride.
Are you saying that Dolores Umbridge is a avatar for J.K. Rowling here?
Because... Yes, because what you keep seeing throughout the elaborate queue is references to, you know, her crimes, but really just one crime. And it is there are little magic robots sweeping up the forms where she made people register as muggle born. So of all of the stuff that she's done, and in the books, that includes torturing children. Mm. The one that they're focusing on here is say what you were when you were born.
Wow.
Huh. Interesting.
An older woman who is making people declare what they were born as is the villain of this ride. And like I was halfway there. And then the one thing I didn't expect were a lot of Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, and Rupert Grint, because she hates them now. And because they've all spoken out against her. And because they're, with the exception of Rupert Grint, they're like, I'm not doing this shit anymore. They are all over this ride. With weird CGI faces and sound-alike voices fighting this older British woman who wants to know what you were born as.
Interesting.
It's so weird that, one, she's the villain, and two, that there's all these little moments with these piles of forms on the floor that I'm like, this is not an accident.
Yeah, wow. Huh. Where is this again?
At the new Universal theme park in Orlando, Epic Universe.
When are you going to get your job? When are you going to get that job where that's your job to go back? And
man, it exists. And I know a guy who I don't think is making a living at it, but is making like a big chunk of his income. And he was like, you know, with Epic opening, you can probably get a lot of freelance work covering this stuff.
Wouldn't you have to pivot to video?
Yeah, that's really the thing.
Yeah.
And I don't want to. Yeah, this was the first trip where I saw, like, not only, you know, you always, people are taking pictures, but like normal people have like weird remotes and microphones and cameras because even normal people traveling to these new places are creating content.
That's crazy. Also, have you been to there's a haunted house or a Halloween horror theme restaurant in Cleveland?
Oh yeah, the Haunted House restaurant. I've been three or four times, of course. Yeah.
Is it worth the trip?
It is worth adding to you being there already.
Gotcha.
I wouldn't be like drive there just for that.
Gotcha.
It's really cool. It's picture a sports bar, replace all the sports with horror.
Nice.
You know, instead of jerseys, there's horror posters. There's the TVs are there, but like this one's showing Beetlejuice and this one's showing Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
There's a couple little quirks. If it's your birthday and you tell them, they'll hit the purge siren and the waitresses will come out with the masks and do the it's your birthday dance. Like it's fun. You know, the food is themed. It's not because the food isn't great and because it's more just like a normal themed restaurant. I wouldn't be like, go just for that. But when I'm there, I try to go because it is a lot of fun.
Go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and have lunch at the horror.
Or the there's a witch museum too. If you want to do like a whole spooky, there's a museum of witchcraft that takes a fairly serious look at like, you know.
Oh, like serious witchcraft? No, I'm good.
No, it's like the history of the Satanism churches in America. And oh, so they're not messing around.
That's
so
not Camila's vibe.
Thus concludes theme park and themed entertainment corner for now. Camila?
I watched the Pee Wee Herman documentary finally. It's really sweet. And
I still haven't watched it because I feel like it will make me sad.
I did not walk away feeling sad. Okay. It was mostly, it was very informative because I was not clear about the deep history of that character.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize that he created it. It was something he had done at an improv troupe and all of that business. And, you know, I didn't realize that it had a life of its own before the movie itself, mm-hmm. even. So, yeah. So it was like really, and it was just great to see him as a person. And he was such a like bitchy, and I love it.
Yeah.
I love the interviews with him, and maybe it'll make you a little bit sad.
Yeah. I mean, I will watch it at some point.
Yeah.
I think.
I think it's two parts, two or three
it
parts.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yep, totally worth a watch. And last time we were talking about true crime horror, mm-hmm. or true crime corner.
Mm-hmm.
But horror applies here.
Yes. Everybody's talking about the Netflix docuseries or documentary.
No, it's just a documentary.
Documentary.
Thank God.
Yeah, documentary. The Unknown Number, A Catfish Story. The fuck? And you said you watched
yes,
it.
Yes, I did watch this because everybody was talking about it.
Right.
And I wish I didn't watch it.
You know, because yeah. I didn't. I watched it before everybody started watching it.
Yeah.
And as I was watching, now, mind you, I wasn't complete. I was working and letting it play. And then
sure.
when like the thing comes up, basically, have you heard about this, Sean?
I've seen it on the.
At this point, we can just spoil
yeah,
it, right,
yeah.
folks? If you don't want to be spoiled, but you do because watching it and
right.
being unspoiled is a deeply unpleasant experience that I find morally questionable. So fast forward if you don't want to be spoiled.
Basically, there's a story. This high school girl is getting all of these harassing text messages from somebody for like a year.
Yeah,
a solid year. Her yeah. and her boyfriend.
And her boyfriend. High school.
Very sexually explicit text messages that also regularly encourage her to kill herself.
Mm. Yeah. And then fast forward to the end and we find out it was her mom that was doing all of this.
Mm.
So that's what I'm saying. So like I said, I was watching it and working. And then to the point where it's like, I know I didn't hear that right.
Yeah, that's right.
No, there's absolutely. And then like seeing like her dad's reaction to it, like, nobody was more the level of pissed off itness was too low for me for everybody involved. And then the mom still trying.
This is what when people are like, we really need to focus more on the family. Are you sure? There's that can be good. That can be bad.
Exactly.
The thing is, the mother participates in the documentary as a seeming.
Right.
Like just a part, you know.
So basically, this
guy was one of the
us.
People. Exactly. Yes. Exactly that. Right. It feels irresponsible. Mm. And it also bothered me that these child victims, I guess they're now 18,
yeah.
but they seem very, very young. And
yeah.
I'm like, I don't really feel comfortable with their level of consent to their story being told in this
True.
Way.
Yeah.
And the main thing from the girl victim is she just keeps saying, I still want to have a relationship
yeah.
with my mother.
Like, babe.
And that is heartbreaking because, like, I get it. She's
yeah.
her mother. But, like, oh, my God.
But she is not emotionally or mentally mature enough to understand that that's not a good idea.
Yes, exactly that. And she has... Like, just I think her personality is just that she has kind of a flat affect,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it in some ways bearable to watch this story. If you watch someone as emotionally expressive as me, for example,
right.
describing if this happened to me, describing mm-hmm. it would be
right.
very different.
Because, like, the scene where the cops are there and they say what's happening and they're just sitting there,
she's
and like, she's
still.
So calm. That's why I was so fucking confused. Like, I know I didn't hear this right.
Yeah.
Y'all are not telling me that this mama has literally told her, texting her child to kill herself. So, yeah.
It was Basically. So. that documentary. Similar to Nashville, when it was over, I was like, what do I do now? How do I just deal with this? Because I can't.
I know. But also, when you... I'm not even going to... No, I'm not. Okay.
Oh! Cross off the Camilla Square! Just
what?
Like
that was the Camilla Square?
The Camilla Square is Camilla just can't. Does anybody get a bingo out of that?
No.
Oh, damn. Shame.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. It's like, how did you phrase this?
Right, yeah.
Camila begins to go there and then, in fact, does not.
And backs up. Throws it in reverse. Mm-hmm. Camila right. thinks better before.
Yeah, anyway, rough documentary. Woof.
Sounds like a no, don't watch that.
Don't.
No. Yeah. She's just going to be upset by life.
Anything else?
And it's not like it's good, is the other thing. No. Right? It's not what Nashville is a masterpiece, right? Yeah. This is a schlocky documentary that will make you feel miserable.
Yeah. Yeah, essentially, yes. This was, I'm going to say this was Netflix's experiment on its audience. Yes. And they were catfishing us all. We all got played.
Ick.
Shout out to Bad Movie Bingo. By Neo Trash Video here in Pittsburgh. If you're in Pittsburgh, go to Bad Movie Bingo, which I just did for last night for the first time. It was a lot of fun. That's why I have finally seen Mac and Me.
Oh boy!
What? And it's like I knew going in, but I'm like, why did you think this was going to work, everybody? Like when you were just like E.T. again, but bad, and you thought that's gonna anyway.
There was a little boy lived in my neighborhood looked like Mac. No lie.
That's unfortunate.
No lie.
Little round mouth on the wrong part of his face.
I hope he grew up into a real face.
I hope so too. I don't remember that kid's name, but I remember the reference.
And also,
you old Mac and Me looking motherfucker. No, sorry.
Also, if you're in Pittsburgh, why you got to come to the Steel City Horror Show? Great one last time. The film was Ravenous from 1999 with Guy Pearce.
I've heard that movie is excellent.
It's really good. Guy Pearce, Robert Carlyle. Finally did a Western. It's a Western horror. Really unexpected. Antonia Bird, who mainly did like little British dramas, got pulled into this project, so it feels a lot different. Music, bizarre score by Damon Albarn from Blur.
Nice.
It's very good. Because it was our first Western, we just had a horse. We had a miniature horse join us in the theater.
Little Sebastian?
And it was, his name is Rudy Valentino, but he looks a lot like Little Sebastian. You never know what's going to happen. It might be a horse. Probably not for a while, but like this is to illustrate.
That set you back.
Sunday, September 28th is the next one of those. Let's draw a movie. Speaking of horror things,
yay.
It's spooky season. We're going to get into
spooky. It's the most wonderful time.
It sure is.
Sean,
mm-hmm.
How many bingos is this for you?
I think it's two.
That means you get to pick a movie.
Hooray! All right. Well, I'm going to, under advice of counsel, I'm going to hold on to that for a while because it's spooky season and we're just going to do... three fun spooky movies, good, bad, in between. I have a veto too, so much power. Will I use it the first week of spooky season, or will we watch The Ring? Early 2000s. I remember going to see this in the theater, and I remember being terrified at the time.
Same. I don't know if I saw it in the theater, but I remember being fucked up.
I saw it for the first time just a few years ago, and I had that classic reaction of, I bet if I saw this when it came out, it would have really messed me up.
But you had, by then, you'd probably like
too much osmosis. Yep. Yeah.
We talked about it a little bit after I watched it recently.
Oh, okay.
So let's listen back to that and repeat ourselves as little as possible before we get into spooky season. That's a good one to kick it off. That's neither new nor really old. You know, it's 23 years old, so I guess it's old.
Probably our first time with Academy Award nominee Naomi Watts.
And certainly I have a whole thing about, and yet what's her name? That child actress was an uncelebrated icon. Stay tuned for next week and I'll explain why. Before we get there, what was the number one?
She's like the voice of Lilo in Lilo and Stitch.
She's both. She's the voice of Lilo. She is the voice of, Chihiro in the American dub of Spirited Away, which is what everyone saw Spirited Away in. She's the girl from The Ring, and she's Donnie Darko's little sister.
Her first name is something with Donnie a Darko's D. Lisa.
It's DeVay Chase.
That sounds right. Yep.
What an iconic run. Yeah. When you're 12.
Where is she now?
We'll find out. Number one song in America for April the 10th, 1987.
Whitney Houston.
I want to dance with somebody.
No.
Nothing's going to stop us?
Correct.
Yay!
We previously mentioned Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now by Starship.
She should have just won for that. We could have avoided so much nonsense.
I think it's because everyone watched Mannequin and we're like, no. Oh. Good song, but I've never seen Mannequin. Maybe it's great.
It's not good, but... Number one.